Well, good evening, everyone, and thank you for the opportunity to come and talk a little bit about the GDF programme. I've been with the programme about 6 years now, although it's been around in various guises since the 80s in the form of Nirex. NDA owned it for a while, my previous company, Radioactive Waste Management. As of early this year, we formed up with another NDA subsidiary, and we're now Nuclear Waste Services, and we're committed to working this programme that was first pointed at in 1976 by Sir Brian Flowers in the Flowers Commission on the Environment. So it's something for the nuclear industry to really think about, why someone with the foresight in 1976 pointing at a programme that needs to be delivered, and we're still here in 2022 making good progress on the sites, but only recently have we stepped into that domain. A lot of the context there, you know, the waste that we have in the UK comes from a whole variety of activity that, you know, traces back since the 1940s. We started generating waste. We have, if there was a gold medal for the stockpile of radioactive waste, we'd be kind of probably on the top of the podium, and not least because we've dabbled in everything as a nation. So it's not only the scale of our inventory, it's its complexity, and everything in the inventory needs a solution. So we've got a pretty big challenge of disposing it. We've got waste stored all over the country, as you can see there. Not an immediate problem now, but it's not fair. And what I mean by that is, imagine if every year a chunk of your tax was for you to store and look after something that was generated 500 years ago or 1,000 years ago. Absolutely no use to you, not doing anything, but you're still paying for it. So the purpose of disposing of the waste as opposed to storing the waste is to address this intergenerational equity, bring back a bit of intergenerational fairness. We shouldn't expect future generations to carry on paying to store the waste that was generated a long time ago and will be generated now. We've been through various ranges of sort of policy work on geological disposal. The policy that we run on now was launched in 2018. It came about from a very thorough look at the previous process that closed down in 2013. Communities are at the heart of it. We're in a voluntary consent-based world. We're looking for communities who can look beyond the immediate tissue rejection of why would I want radioactive waste in my environment, to people who start to see the benefits that the program will bring. Jobs, investment, long-term economic activity, very sort of steady enterprise for the right community to take on. Just to make sure we all know roughly what I'm talking about in terms of a geological disposal facility, this waste that stays active and dangerous for thousands of years, some of it up to hundreds of thousands of years, the deep geological barriers somewhere in the region, up to 1,000 metres deep, provide the adequate control of that waste, and we can put it in a facility. So at the right-hand side of the screen there, we're talking an area 5 by 5, 6 by 6 kilometres, about 1,000 metres beneath the seabed, engineered vaults and tunnels, that's where the waste goes. Surface facilities, nothing too dramatic, not heavy industrial use, about a square kilometre. The waste is packaged to be passively safe in other facilities, such as Sellafield. So this is a logistics facility, bringing in waste from around the country, moving it to depth, putting it into the right vaults and tunnels, and then eventually, after a very long period of operations, over 100 years, the facility is sealed up. But that's, in essence, that's what a deep geological repository is all about. Policy is working well for us now. We've probably got the most vibrant process going that we've had for some time. This was built on the back of looking internationally at what was working elsewhere. Nirex days was a decide, announce, defend type policy. The 2008 to 2013 policy was very rigid from a community perspective. It sort of drove them down. They felt they were being marched down a line at a predetermined pace. So a very flexible policy for us now, and I'll mention the communities we've got in just a second. Internationally, it is really the only game in town for disposal of large complex inventories. There are plenty of other options for the lower end of the spectrum, near surface disposal. there's options being developed, deep borehole disposal that could accommodate certain niche products. But when you look at our inventory, even when you look at the size, some of the packages we're talking, you know, 6 cubic meter concrete boxes, you know, 50 tons a piece, they're not going down a borehole. Well, not with with anything that we can think of today. So all, you know, work very closely with a lot of these international waste management organizations. Finland is the front runner at the moment. They've constructed the first part of their facility. They're doing final commissioning work next year, and then they'll be into operations, and they're disposing of Finland's inventory of spent fuel. SKB in Sweden, not too far behind. The French program, CGO project near Bure, they'll probably be in operations towards the end of this decade. Switzerland, it'll be interesting to watch this year. They're announcing their site. They've gone down a different policy of find the site they want and tell society that's where it's going to be. And Canada's, again, just coming out of a long site selection process. They had a lot of community volunteer, over 20, 22, I think, and they're getting down to their final choice. So we're in good company, but as the nation that started the atomic age, you know, I feel it personally is something that we really should keep this program in focus, because it helps all of us. It gives us, I think of it as giving us the license to operate. If we can close the back end of the fuel cycle with a permanent disposal solution that terminates the liability, terminates future human activity, then I think we're doing a really good thing. Just wanted to mention this sort of, in terms of the theme of the energy strategy that's just been announced, the shift up to an aspiration for 24 gigawatts, how does that affect the GDF program? It's pretty easy to accommodate it. We're talking about a geological footprint increasing from perhaps 5 by 5 kilometres to about 6 by 6 kilometres. We already, in the policy that was set in 2014, had 16 gigawatts baked into our program, along with a lot of other items that are still in debate as to whether they represent wastes or not, so things like depleted uranium. So we've all long had a pretty large inventory in our sites, and it's very modular. You don't build the GDF, commission it and turn it on. You build the first capabilities you need, and then just like a mine, it evolves over the next 100 or more years. So very flexible as to the number of vaults and disposal facilities that you build in a GDF. So the answer is 24 gigawatts is, you know, no specific challenge for GDF, and we're at the early part of the design program, so very easy to accommodate that type of change. Just to give you some sort of sense of this is real, we've now got 4 communities in the process, 2 areas of Copeland in West Cumbria and Allerdale, and then really interesting for us, Steddelthorpe on the East Coast, because it's the first non-nuclear community that's kind of started to look at it. Great geology, some challenges over there. But those 4 communities, we're in a period out till about 2025 now, where we're doing seismic studies, feasibility work, and then we'll bring a decision back to Bayes in around late 25, 26 to pick the 2 front runners that we then take into a program of doing all the deep borehole drilling, full site characterization, etc. Sort of the sell on this for communities, quite tricky, as you can imagine. Interesting, an ex-colleague of mine, he's the director of the STEP program, the new fusion program, and when they launched their siting process, I think they had a long list of about 50 local authorities and whittled down very quickly to their recommended 5 that they're going to look with in terms of feasibility. You know, there's something in the human psyche that if it's new and shiny and saving the planet and, you know, delivering power, solving climate change, that seems to be attractive. We're trying to get people to see an element of hosting this facility. Not only does it provide economic sense, jobs, you know, some fairly tangible things quite quickly, but actually, you know, in terms of national infrastructure that has to be hosted, this is part of the NDA's overall cleanup mission. Largest environmental cleanup mission in the UK, and so it's a pretty worthwhile thing to be backing, to say that you're going to be part of a program that will help us dispose of the nation's waste. Just a few. I think I've probably covered most of the facts and figures there. It really is about us having the patience to work with the communities. All of the last 40 years has taught us that whenever organisations or government try to enforce this into an area, then it doesn't work. And that's not just a UK experience. There's plenty of experience globally. So we really are serious this time that, you know, communities are at the heart of it. And, you know, one of my pleas to the whole of the nuclear community needs a little bit of strategic patience at times. As I said, we fired the gun in 76 and people are quibbling over whether I can shorten the timeline by a year or two to get to first waste in placement. Actually, the important bit is building that trust with the communities, carrying them over the line and really getting them invested in an enterprise that they're going to be proud to host and be part of for a very long time. Look forward to all the questions and the debate that we'll have on this one. Thank you.